Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From newsounds.org, it's another remote edition of the Soundcheck podcast. I'm John Schaefer, and with the WNYC studios still closed here in New York, Ben Harper is joining us from his home in California. The three-time Grammy winner has had a wildly eclectic career as a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer, and activist. Those three Grammys came in the pop, gospel, and blues categories, but none of those categories really fits his newest project. An album called Winter is for Lovers. The album is an instrumental collection of works played on the lap steel guitar, and only the lap steel guitar. Ben Harper's going to play a few of those pieces for us now, beginning with this one called London. That is Ben Harper playing live at home and a song called London, which will be on his new record called Winter is for Lovers, out on October 23rd. Ben, first of all, great to have you with us. How are you doing out there these days?
I'm doing fine. Day by day, just handling it. I figure if I can make it to my morning coffee without catching this thing, I'm doing something right.
Now, you played that piece with your lap steel guitar on your lap, and clearly this instrument is made for this kind of thing because there's like a brace under the neck that sits on your leg.
That's exactly right. And made by the mighty John Monteleone in Islip, New York.
Ah, well, that explains why there is a track on the forthcoming record called Islip.
Yes, yes.
It's a globe-trotting album full of place names, and I thought, Islip, Long Island? What's that doing there?
That's the origin of the instrument.
Okay, so why all the place names? I mean, does each of these places have a guitar or guitarist associated with it?
These are the places where the pieces were either written or that influenced the music heavily. And there were other places as well, but I have to leave room for record number two.
And this piece, London. So who among the great cast of British guitarists did you have in your mind's ear when you wrote that?
Jimmy Page and Nick Drake. Nick Drake is one of my favorite singer-songwriter guitarists. And then, of course, Jimmy Page is one of the great guitarists of all time. And it just, to me, felt and audibly tasted like London.
Yeah. Now, actually, mentioning Nick Drake, the last thing we heard from you was that wonderful version you did with Rhiannon Giddens.
Thank you, John.
Of Black Eyed Dog. I just thought that was tremendous.
What an honor to actually have... Well, to not get beat up by Nick Drake fans when you do a Nick Drake cover is a huge triumph in itself. And I think we avoided that at the very least. So thank you.
Yeah. So this whole album is an instrumental record.
Yes.
It's, I guess, inspired by, among other things, the so-called American primitive style, right?
Very much so. A cross between that and solo blues and classical guitar as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll hear in, I guess, in the next piece in a moment or two, this piece called Joshua Tree, that's kind of a Spanish, I feel.
Very much so. I love Sabicas and Andre Segovia and Manolo Sanlúcar.
Right.
The greats in that style. And of course, I can't do anything that they can do, but I can, in my own unorthodox lap steel kind of a way, as you pointed out, it's not your sort of standard go-to guitar style. In my own way, I try to bring it in for a landing.
Yeah, yeah. So now, Segovia, obviously classical guitar, but Sabicas et al., those guys are flamenco. So you've obviously been listening to lots of different... I mean, you grew up basically listening to all of these great guitarists, right?
I did. And John, what else is exciting is that, you know, first of all, I had a family with exciting musical taste that was very, very... some would call it eccentric. I would call it eclectic. It's probably a 50-50. But I also heard a lot of people. I grew up in a music store that's also a museum, and it's a sort of sociocultural musical center for miles around. And you would never know. You'd never know who would come in, get off of an old 10-speed bike. Remember 10 speeds?
Yeah, yeah.
And they just let it fall to the ground, and they would walk in and play the finest flamenco guitar you had ever heard, and they'd get back on their bike and ride away, and you'd never see them again, and you'd just be, as a kid even, just slack-jawed. So those are the perks of being a music store brat.
Yeah. So the so-called American primitive style, first of all, I keep saying so-called because the people who founded it, people like John Fahey and Robbie Basho, were deeply inspired by other music from around the world. And it's a pretty sophisticated style of playing for something that people call primitive. What was your first exposure?
Good point.
Yeah. What was your first exposure to those guys, to that music?
My first exposure was the lore, because my family, adjacent to the music store in its earliest stages, late 50s, early 60s, also had a coffee house called the Golden Ring. It was a coffee house concert venue, as all coffee houses were back in the day.
Right.
And so John was a mainstay. We would bring him through. My family would bring him. This is before I was born.
Wait. John?
John Fahey?
Fahey?
Yes. The John
really?
Fahey. Yeah, absolutely. And so, and he was, you know, while next level intellectual, from what I understand, also did things his way. And So I grew up with, you know, every month there'd be a retelling of a John Fahey story by my mom or my grandparents, which were always, so, but all the while spinning his music in the background, the soundtrack of my childhood.
Wow. Well, for...
And so that Tacoma, Windham Hill sound is, that was to me the first American extension of the blues, as was jazz, possibly one of the earliest extensions of... Well, who's to say where that came from?
Well, yeah, I mean, it, I guess it all...
Another extension of the blues,
actually. I was
going to
say, it all comes from the blues in one way or the other.
Yeah.
But, you know, it might seem like this piece you're going to do next, Joshua Tree, with its Spanish feel, might be far afield from that. But, of course, what is flamenco? It's Spanish blues, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, Spain's far too close to Africa for that not have made its way right there.
Yeah. All right. We're speaking with Ben Harper. He's at home in California. I'm at home here in Brooklyn, and we're going to listen now to Joshua Tree. This is another track from the forthcoming record, called Winter Is for Lovers. Once again, Ben Harper playing live, remotely, on Soundcheck with a piece called Joshua Tree. The album comes out October 23rd, called Winter Is for Lovers. And so we were talking, Ben, about this American primitive style. John Fahey never sang. But the other guys, Leo Kottke, Robbie Basho, could and did sing. You can and do sing. Why make this whole project specifically instrumental?
Because I made this record entirely instrumental because it was always something that I was taking aim towards. I knew I always wanted to make a lap steel instrumental record. It was just a matter of when, how, and where. I've written lyrics aplenty. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been, no one can say, well, you know, you're missing a few words. No. And if anything, it was time that I went quiet. And in challenging times like this, John, I am speechless anyway.
Yeah. Well, and you have had a very long career as an active wordsmith, both as a lyricist and as an activist. So, but as we've heard in other forms of music, going silent doesn't mean you stop communicating. You don't stop speaking and, getting a message across. So.
No. And hopefully not. I mean, if this, so far so good in what I'm getting back in the reciprocation as far as people who are hearing the music, it seems like it's being received in the way that you're mentioning, that there's no lack of communication. So I'm counting on you being right.
Well, and, you know, we mentioned your collaboration with Rhiannon Giddens on the Nick Drake song. Without making a big deal of it, it was important for people of color to be represented in that corner of the music world.
Always been proud of that. Yes.
Yeah. And the two of you, you know, as I say, didn't have to make a big deal of it. You just did it.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's half the battle is just showing up. Is, was it Yogi Berra who said that?
I'll take it. Amen.
Yeah, it sounds like him.
100%.
Both London, the first song you did, and Inland Empire, the song you're going to do for us next, there are official videos for these songs. Were they shot in that folk music center that your family runs?
That's the folk music center.
You're just in what looks like a museum of musical instruments.
And that's what it is. And that's what the pullback shot from afar is fun. That one kind of, and that's just one corner of the place.
Well, but you have like a little museum thing happening there in your house because you've got a banjo on the couch and what looks like a hammered dulcimer behind it.
Oh,
what
the banjo. I was wondering who was crowding me. yeah, there's a hammered dulcimer. I have as much of a quarantine de facto music store in this house as space will allow.
Yeah. But guitar was always your first instrument?
Drums were my first instrument, piano my second, guitar my third.
Huh.
But we're talking maybe drums 10 to 12, piano all my life because it was in the middle of the house, and then guitar in my early teens.
Yeah. And when did you start putting the guitar on your lap?
I actually played lap steel guitar before I had any concern about a fret.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're totally comfortable with the slide. And so when in Inland Empire, when we hear in this song both the notes sliding up the string and its kind of echo moving down.
Yeah, yeah.
That's intentional on your part.
It's not only intentional, but it's taking liberties in that you're supposed to dampen the string. I mean, the dampening process
right,
on steel guitar.
You're not supposed to hear, right. You're not supposed to hear that no. crossing note.
No, no. We're all of us, you know, steel guitar player. Musicians are all trying to invent the 13th note, you know?
So tell me a little bit about this piece, Inland Empire.
Inland Empire, it's the region I grew up, the 909. And that's also my connection with Joshua Tree because it's so secluded and isolated from the big city, which is LA for us country folk.
Right.
We would venture east in my youthful experimental days. And we'd head out to Joshua Tree and San Bernardino and Fontana. That was just where, when you finally had a friend with a car, we were eastbound. And as home informs all of us in that way that only home can, however we define it, Inland Empire is home for me, so it resonates, I think, strongest in that piece.
Well, and it's also a waltz, and
yes.
Here in America, the waltz has an echo of nostalgia, you know.
100%. You caught that. You're the first person to catch the nostalgia of the waltz.
All right. Well, so it's not a Tennessee waltz, it's an Inland Empire waltz.
That's right.
All right, Ben Harper is with us from home in California, and let's now hear his performance of Inland Empire from the forthcoming album called Winter is for Lovers.
Thank you.
Once again, Ben Harper playing live, and a piece called Inland Empire from the forthcoming record Winter is for Lovers. I do have to ask you about the title of the record, Ben. I mean, it seems almost like a concept record when you look at the song titles because they're all place names. So what does the album title have to do with that?
It has to do with a specific winter in New York having a profound effect on this record and its sound. Right around the time that I arrived at that title was because the pieces were individual pieces that I knew I was working on simultaneously, and I couldn't put the record together the way I wanted it. I was caught as to how I was going to bring the record to life, and all the while in winter reading David Foster Wallace's Infinite Jest, I got a third of the way through the book or so. And I had to know what was driving this book, what was behind it, how something could like that could come to fruition. So I started moving around the internet and found an interview where he speaks of Infinite Jest as being short stories he was working on at the same time and came to the realization that it was one body of work. And that was the signpost as to what I was trying to do.
So some of these pieces are actually quite short. There's one or two that are under a minute long.
Yes.
But you're seeing this as a whole kind of single body of work.
Once I came to that realization in that winter in New York, the title followed suit, and I started working on the album as one body of music. And that was a defining moment for the record, so I figured I'd give it that title.
So now, is this something, when you say you'd been sort of working up to this for a long time, are some of these pieces old and they've just been kicking around and needed a home?
No, I've been road testing a few of these for years, if not over a decade.
So when, in the fullness of time, you are back on the road and playing songs, will these pieces, you know, find their way as kind of instrumental interludes into some of those shows?
They'll either find their way as instrumental interludes or I'll do an acoustic tour.
Yeah. I think it's a terrific record. I suspect we share a lot of fandom of some of the old guitar players.
Surely.
Sure. John Fahey was in our studio a couple of times.
Was he really?
Yeah. He did a Christmas show back in the... Gosh, it must have been early 90s.
That must have been far out.
Yeah. Well, he was, as you probably know, a troubled guy in addition to a supremely gifted guy. And he was full of tales, some of them dark and some of them not.
You know, John, I have yet to meet a stable genius.
But wait, isn't that guy on TV all the time? Doesn't he say he's a stable, very stable genius?
All right. Okay. Well, then I'll have to meet him then. Or let me rephrase that. I have yet to meet a genius who's not troubled in one fashion or another.
Yeah. Well, but you know, there is a theory that, you know, keeps coming up from the neuroscience end of things, that creativity is a kind of pathology.
Well, it's certainly self-centered and narcissistic at the very least. So all of us need to break through and break away from that. Good dose of
humility.
Humility, yeah.
I mean, in a funny way, Ben, stripping everything away except you and the guitar seems like it might be a kind of navel-gazing exercise in narcissism, but in fact, it comes across as really just kind of putting the music out there and letting the music take center stage. It seems like a self-abnegating sort of thing.
It's actually in a weird way. I think it's actually, if you would have heard the version of the record that is produced with the symphony, which was its original iteration, you'd see me standing stark, bare bones. At first, I recorded 2-3-4 day sessions at Capitol Studio A with massive orchestration. Got a couple of B-sides out of it.
Wow.
Thanks to Robert Glasper. Robert Glasper came in and he's on a couple of tracks, and I had to save those.
Wow. So there's piano involved as well. And
yeah, yeah. But the timpani drums and the strings are gone.
So there are some basement tapes from Winter is for Lovers.
For sure.
I look forward to hearing some of those, because I mean this is a really special record, Ben, and
Thanks, John.
Really delighted that you were able to play some of the pieces for us today, and let's hope that we get to see you here in New York again soon.
Knocking on wood. See you soon.
And that's going to do it for this remote edition of the Soundcheck podcast. If you'd like to see Ben Harper's performances of these pieces he's been playing for us, watch the videos on our website, newsounds.org, or our YouTube channel. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. Our video editor is David McLean. And I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us for the Soundcheck podcast.